Tonight I'd like to talk about the three themes in education and the three aspects of the human being in Waldorf education. Those three aspects have been often referred to as teaching to the head, the heart, and the hands, the threefold aspect of what it means to be human. And I'd like to put that into an aspect of resilience, the role of the arts and creativity and imagination, and the wholeness and teaching to the wholeness of the human being. So we're not alone in looking at that. Paul Gauguin in 1897 did a painting in Tahiti. And he started asking, well, how are we losing what it means to be human? And he carried that question to Tahiti, where he was trying to capture what he considered the rawness of what it means to be human. So he painted this picture. So this was his painting, and he wrote three questions in the top left-hand side. Those were the titles to his painting, and he considered this painting the greatest work that he had ever done and would ever do. And those three questions were, who am I? Who are we? Where have we come from? And where are we going? And in answering these questions, he was looking at the human being through the cycle of human development. In the far right-hand corner, you're looking at a child, an infant lying down. And the far left-hand corner, you're looking at an old woman near death. And everything in between is life's triumphs, the rise and fall of human relationships, raising families, working, and our spiritual path. And so he really considered this very biblical. In one painting, he was working with the fell swoop of human development. And in asking the questions, who are we, where have we come from, and where are we going? He was actually really working with the key questions of what we're looking at in the past, the present, and the future of education today, and where society is going. He began to really look at the work of Yuval Harari. He wrote 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. He really said we need to find an inner resilience, and that we will all be asking ourselves, who am I? And it's a more urgent and complicated question than ever before. So he was also in the course of really looking at the essential nature of what it means to be a human being through the act of and art of living and raising our children. He would agree with Rudolf Steiner, who also created a journey of human development that we teach through. Rudolf Steiner said that it took 21 years to actually incarnate into being a full adult. So the first 7 years, so said Steiner, is the sort of from the time of embryonic development to the time of the change of teeth. Our physical body grows faster than it will for the rest of our lives, from that of an infant to that of a toddler, walking and talking on our own, where our head is the largest aspect of us at birth, and then we slowly grow into it, into our head, you could say. The rest of our limbs catch up. And in so doing, we are really quite alive to the life forces of the world. And so we are connected to the earth in a very strong way. And so playing with nature and working out of nature forces are absolutely key to the development of the human being between 0 and 7. Working with play and imagination equals that of studying physics in university. So it's as important to really go into the full scale play and imagination in those younger years. Because like Einstein said, if you want a child to be intelligent, read them fairy tales. If you want them to be more intelligent, read them more fairy tales. So in the course of really looking at what Steiner had to say, he said, if you want a child to be intelligent, really develop their imaginations. When the child is in the preschool level, kindergarten level, the teacher is really playing the role of a nature guide. You would say in the olden days, it would be a priest or a priestess, but the level of reverence for the world is absolutely key. The children soak it in. And so we try in the Waldorf kindergartens, which again starts with mom and tot at 3 years old, and it goes to 6 years old at different levels of programming. We really work with the world is good. Everything about the world is good. The way you hold your cup is held with reverence and delight and slowness and softness. And so the children realize that everything in the world is sacred. Everything in the world is worthy of being touched with care and attention. So the Waldorf kindergarten teacher really has to find their own inner stillness to work out of that deep reverence for the world, for each other, and for nature. Steiner said they're ready for concept a little later on. They're ready to go to school at the age of 7 when their teeth start actually falling out. And this is where we start looking at teaching from the bottom up rather than the top down, because we're really working with the forces that from the ground. And so that happens in our mineral world, where we're mineralizing from within and our teeth are falling out. And Steiner said at that point, they're ready to leave their nuclear family. They're ready to go to school, though we know in our age, we do that very differently now. We often go to school a lot younger. But now we're ready to be with a different tribe. In the Waldorf school, that would be a class teacher. And that class teacher accepts that child into the class and greets them every morning with a handshake and a smile often. And we, through that handshake, we are gauging how have they slept? Are we connecting with them individually? Do they feel like they belong, that we received them into the classroom? Do they, are their hands sweaty or hot? Do they need to have more activity or less of it? We can kind of like pick up on where they've been at, and we might need to change our lesson because of it. So part of what a Waldorf teacher really does is work on that individual aspect, and then we go into group, back into individual, back into group. So we're playing this juxtaposition between the breath, really, between receiving and listening and speaking and listening, between contraction and back. Expansion, contraction, expansion of individual and community, individual and community. So it all belongs together in the play of life. And of course, we go through the next 7 years of human development as the class teacher. Now, the class teacher's role is really the role of the arts, to really work out of that creativity and imagination. That's the seed bed of the younger child, becomes the food and the means and the modality of the child between 7 and 14. And so what happens there is that the teacher is really the jack of all trades and can pull out of science aspects, out of artistic aspects, out of linguistic or language or historical aspect, but really needs to work an integrated curriculum in a wide variety of ways. The class teacher in grade 1 to 8 in the Waldorf school, age 7 to 14, really actively is the artist. And they're working the concept that the world is beautiful, and that everything that we're trying to give the children at this time, from the world is good to the world is beautiful. But everything that you can direct their attention to that is beautiful moves and weaves a certain kind of resilience in their soul. The teachers from these grade level know that they are the artists, and they are fostering the kind of creative capacity and imagination for the children to work out of inspiration, so that later they feel like they can trust themselves and one another, and in a way to intuit what needs to come. But really, we're giving them a lot of information instead of food for the soul that becomes information, inward information later on. So, and Yuval Harari basically said, the last thing we need in the world is more information. He said, when you look at the world at the click of your fingertips, you are going into, Googling anything. You don't need more information. So what's our educational system about if it's not to impart information, right? It's really, I think, no less than working the resilience of the human being and to really arrive at those questions again. Who are we? Where have we come from? And where are we going? So in looking at where we've come from through the history in the curriculum of the Waldorf School, just from grade 1 to 8, you're looking through the historical context of everything from prehistory. We're looking at fairy tales in grade 1 and nature stories, legends, saints and fables, all the way through to the modern day, post-industrial era. What are we doing to the technological age? All the way through from grade 1 to grade 8. And while we're looking at that curriculum in a socio-historical context, we're actually interspersing that with the geographia. So we've got historia on one side, and then we've got geographia on the other, which are the sciences and the maths. And the two of them dovetail each other beautifully. It's like a wonderful breathing of science and math. And again, we start in grade 1 with the geographia coming into the body. So math is taught through rhythm, through sound, number one, and then through movement, through bilateral movements. And they might stamp it, they might clap it, and then they might snap it. When we're looking at bilateral movement and teaching from the bottom up in a Waldorf school, grade 1 to 8, and again through high school, we really look at what that is and how it works with left brain hemispheres, which are, you know, analytical and intuitive brain hemispheres. So in the Waldorf classrooms, we, before they even start sitting in their classrooms and learning, we have them skipping, we have them doing what we call morning circle exercises with hand and arm movement through bean bags, through clapping, through stamping, through clapping games with one another, finger exercises. We have them playing the recorders. We have them stepping. We have them doing a variety of different bilateral movements, using beanbags in particular, specifically to balance the left-right brain hemisphere before they learn. So before we expect them to sit down and learn anything, we take them through a series of these bilateral movements. At the end of the day, the math is brought in through rhythm and movement, and the geographia part, the nature part, is really brought out with a sense of spatial awareness. Through history, we work through time. Through geography, we work through space. So in the curriculum from grade 1 to grade 8, you are weaving and balancing time and space, looking at aspects of time and space. We have to recognize that there's a whole other aspect to our teaching and to being human that isn't necessarily awake, right? It's our sleep life. So I've been reading the National Geographic called Sleep Inside the New Science of Slumber. I highly recommend this read. When we're hooked up to the equipment that allow us to see what our brains are doing, they're often more active in our stage 4 sleep than they are when we're awake. They often show that when we are getting an idea and we are really hit with that, ooh, I have it, there it is, that our brain waves go wild, and we are meeting that in stage 4 sleep every time we allow ourselves to get into that. Well, interestingly enough, in 1919, when Steiner started the first Waldorf School in Stuttgart, Germany, he actually said that. He said, we have to teach to the sleep. So in Waldorf schools, teachers are trained to work with a 3-day rhythm. That 3-day rhythm is working with head, heart, and hands. So we don't just introduce a concept and then bank it and drill it into them and then try to regurgitate it, right? What we try to do is we work with experience first. We work with that through imagination. So we tell a story. It's often through the auditory aspect, but in the later grades, it would be in a science experiment. It would be just the delivery of, let's watch it. Let's not say what's happening. Let's just do it. And we're going to see it and say what we observe out of what we do. And then we learn the concept. So the first day, we introduce the subject. And then we send them off and they go to sleep. And we know that they're going to be, if we've told the story well enough, or we've introduced the experiment well enough, out of pure observation and interest, the children take that into their soul lives, they go to sleep. We're teaching so that they can go to sleep on it. We're not drumming it up. They go to sleep, and Steiner, actually, I'm gonna halt that part because he said they go to sleep, and when the children actually go into the first level of sleep, through nature consciousness and story and imagination, they enter this world of sleep where the capacity for imagination is cultivated. Now back to National Geographic, that's exactly what they're saying. The capacity for imagination is cultivated when we are allowed to go and sink into that deepest part of sleep. And being awake is actually more demanding than being asleep. But when we're asleep, we edit all our experiences during the day. And that's actually in stage three. And we go into what to keep and what not to keep, like a good editor would. And we synthesize our experiences. So then we do that and we come back renewed, so said Steiner, into, in a way, an artistic capacity of that feeling of what it was that we were learning. And so often in the Waldorf School, especially in the lower grades, but I would say all the way through, the class teacher would then take that story, that concept, and now render it artistically. That can be done through play, that can be done through movement, through a play, theater, that can be done through drawing in a main lesson book, drawing on paper, painting. So really when they think of teachers, artists, how do we get the children working their own artistic capacities after this evening of sleep? And the children often really see it when you come back and ask them about what they've heard. The children are coming back and you're cultivating the level of creative imagination within them. And we realize that because it takes 21 years to actually arrive and be a human being, that we have time with our teaching. We don't have to know it right away. And just because we've taught it doesn't mean they get it. And we don't want them to, actually. We want it to go and get filtered through an artistic capacity. And so then we send the, we work the arts, and then they go back home and they go to sleep. It's day three that we want to land that concept. It's day three that they do something with it. So we might be working a grammar lesson, and we might be actually putting that into a full-on story, creative story about whatever we've said in that day, but not in day one, not in day two, but in day three, because we've slowly been building the capacity for it. And this is what we call from the head into the heart, landing in the will life, into the hands. And we create a wide variety and template for the children to really work with their hands, from concept to creation. Now, the third stage, 14 to 21, the adolescent enters high school, enters their own what Rudolf Steiner called a love for the world. The world is true. What is the human quest for truth? Back to Gauguin's painting. The youth is really looking at, who am I? Why am I here? What am I supposed to do? And they're filled with that. And they're filled. And so we try to bring a real sense of mystery and love for the world and social encounter, because their attachment to their parents, which has started to leave at around the age of 9, definitely by the age of 12, and by 14, they are now really turning to their peers as their go-tos rather than their parents or they're even their teachers, that there might be some special teachers in there. So in the course of looking at what is true and what we're looking for, we have to compare that to what's going on today in today's technological revolution. So the sensory overstimulation of our time is caused an 80% rise in autoimmune diseases. I learned this through a site called, Technological Revolution. And so they're realizing that at an 80% rise of autoimmune diseases, we are trying to keep up with technology. We're trying, human beings weren't meant to work like computers. We weren't meant to work all through the night with only using the right hand for clicking, and especially our right index finger for clicking. And that we are shutting down, and our bodies are shutting down. So there's a level of sensory overstimulation going on that has been identified in both Time Life and the Science of Creativity, has recognized that the antidote to the age today for what it means to be human is to be more and more creative. But also this book, Scientific American, see it? Humans, Why We're Unlike Any Other Species on the Planet. This was the fall issue, September 2018. And they're really looking at this question as well. So, when computers can play us and even compose music better than we can, so they say, what is it that we're doing? And what Yuval Harari says is, we'll just become irrelevant. It's not that we'll be outsourced, we'll just be irrelevant because algorithms will take over. But what we're really looking at is, how do we meet that? And how do we meet that for our children and ourselves at this time? How do we keep ourselves from becoming overstimulated? We work with that, level of resilience and wholeness in our lives and in our educational delivery. I'd like to cite that there's also a high degree of rise in anxiety. So in the 1940s, 50s, the anxiety would hit 30-year-olds, between 30 and 40, and it was often work and success related. And in the 1960s, 70s, it went into college. So we're looking at the highest percentage of anxiety, depression, and suicide was in college. So that would be the 20s. And in the 1980s, we're in high school. Depression and suicide is now, or suicidal depression and anxiety and anxiety-ridden ailments are prevalent in the 90s in high school. Junior high to 8 years old would be the current day. So we're looking at an 8-year-old with high degrees of anxiety. Again, I'd like to quote Yuval Harari. He says in here, to survive and flourish in such a world, you will need a lot of mental flexibility and great reserves of emotional balance. I learned about the window of tolerance. So this is the window of tolerance, just pulled off the net, where that comfort zone is emotionally regulated and where we can regulate our emotional state that's coming around now from 8 years old up. And we have a cooler aspect of freeze, flight, disassociation, disconnected freeze response when we're not in our window of tolerance, or a hyper fight flight response, which can get into anxiety and being overwhelmed and angry. And I don't want to spend a lot of time here. I just wanted to point to it, because the comfort zone here are the things that you do that make you feel good. Your belief systems, your self-care, your mindfulness, how you self-soothe, what works, so that you can stay in your window of tolerance. So I decided to make a Waldorf window of tolerance. And this is really working with what I consider a resilient education that's happening in a Waldorf school worldwide. You can count on this. We work with teaching through sleep, through 3 days. Teaching, yeah, I'd call it the slow education movement, you know, like slow cooking or something. But it's a slow education, and we believe that that's the best way to really work with what we consider intelligence to be. So that imagination in the younger grades turns into intellectualism in the older, in high school. You don't expect to see it at 6, you see it at 16. That's its place to some degree. But we work with story, we work with arts through creativity, we work with movement actively a lot. The first hour of a classroom is often some level of movement, and in a wide variety of ways, whether it be going into work projects in grade 3 or going into a gym class or a game, or starting the day by running around the field rather than expecting them to come and sit still. So movement is key for learning, and music is central in a Waldorf school. All of this really works towards that, what we would call comfort zone, window of tolerance, that really serves to meet what is whole in the human being. And it reminds us who we are, where we have come from, and leads us into where we would be going. So everything is about from finding it to finishing it in the Waldorf school, from grade 1 to grade 8. So you can't just wear shoes, you have to make them. You don't just read books, you have to write them and illustrate them. You don't just have a recorder bag, you knit it or crochet it. So for your a crayon bag. So they make their own things, and they learn that they can be resourceful. I found a BBC News article that said that I'd like to share with you all. A professor of surgery says students spend so much time in front of screens and so little time using their hands that they've lost the dexterity for stitching or sewing up patients. So this is our age, this is our time. And I just want to slip back and talk a little bit about, again, the sleep, the power of sleep and the power of learning through sleep, because it's said that a third of us at this point worldwide are suffering from sleep disorders, where we're not actually sleeping. And children who are given tablets and iPads to look at, especially right before sleep, our eyes dilate. And then it triggers a certain brain wave that doesn't shut off. So we actually cannot get into that REM sleep, stage 4 sleep. We hover because our eyes cannot tone down. So it's highly recommended not to let your child or even ourselves go online right before bed. If you suffer from a sleep issue, that might be one way to start coping with it. But more importantly, when we are really looking at not being able to sleep, we're not being able to rest, we're not being able to find that inner level of resilience. And when we can't do that, it's very hard to imagine and get creative. It's very hard. We're just in coping mechanism now. But they're coming to a Waldorf school, and they're met with beauty everywhere you look. Everywhere you look, you'll see color, warmth, and beauty. So the two tenets that a Waldorf teacher follows, that I would say every Waldorf school has, would be the elements of light and warmth. The light is in the children's eyes when you greet them in the morning. And you know how they're doing when you have that personalized touch. The light is in the eyes of the curriculum that goes through history and geography from the earliest time of recorded history and pre-recorded history to the present day. Basically taking liberal arts and the liberal arts curriculum of liberal arts, grade 1 to grade 8, and condensing that into a high school curriculum in a strong way, like a beautiful seed. The warmth is there when you walk in and you see all that color. The warmth is there when they have a sense of belonging. This is their school. This is their teacher. This is their class. And that sense of belonging, I can't speak enough to. Adrian Clarkson, the 26th Canadian Governor General, gave several series of talks and wrote a book called Belonging, the Paradox of Citizenship. And in it, she was really speaking to Canada, belonging to Canada as a society and as a country, that every part of Canada is based on diversity. And in the schools today, we really have to meet social diversity. And you could say that you can homeschool, and you can pick and choose what levels of diversity you're going into. But when children are going to a school, Rudolf Steiner said, that's why they're there. They're not, they can learn anything they want to learn. We're not there to teach them more information, or as Harari says, don't give them more information. We're there to teach them social skills. And every teacher I work with today is actively working with embracing and working with social skills. So unless we have those social skills of meeting the diversity of kids that we wouldn't necessarily agree with or connect to, we now have to find our way with them, with the help of the class teacher, to make that work, because we don't necessarily, it's not always easy. It's not always beautiful and wonderful, like walking into a room full of adults. You don't necessarily connect to everyone, and children don't either. So it's a question of, how do we get there? We work with the arts. We work with movement. We work with the light of personal contact. We work with that breathing of individual and community, individual and community. You know, who am I? Who are we? Where are you going? Where are we going? So that full sense of community is brought through the festivals in a larger way. The parents are involved in Waldorf schools. They're often very involved in all the festivals that go on there throughout the year. And it brings in the idea of a whole school community, a whole school of belonging that the children can lean into and live with. It's almost a time that's passed, unless you belong to a church. But if you don't belong to a church, there's that sense of, where does your child feel that sense of belonging outside of the nuclear family? Where do they have that in their experience? And I'll close with this particular aspect of belonging through plays. Every class does a play every year, if not several, in a wide variety of ways, just doing as a skit from a main lesson to a full-on play for the public performance from grade 1 to grade 8. And what that did when I taught my first few classes, and I was going back through the years in grade 8, and I said, well, what do you remember? You know? And I was wanting them to say, oh, remember that great experiment we did, Miss Walters? And wow, that story was incredible. No, what they remembered mostly were the plays. And they remembered the lines from the plays in grade 2 when they were 14 and in grade 8. And they remembered who played it and who was away the day that they were actually doing their dress rehearsal. They remembered that. So when you talk about aspects of social cohesion, you realize what a play really does is it gives us the opportunity to play together without it being us. and to us, and the fact that we all need one another. When I looked at the Alpengol Waldorf School, which this talk is for, I sent a questionnaire to the board, and I asked them, among other things, what does wholeness mean to you? And a few of them really responded with aspects of emotional, social, physical, mental, and academic incorporation and balance of abilities. Wholeness is a mental, emotional, logical, and spiritual development. It means being connected to your family, friends, and community. Mind, body, soul. Well, all of this is embedded in the Waldorf curriculum, in Waldorf schools, and it's being practiced on a daily basis. So you have to say, does it work? Steiner said, our highest endeavor must be to develop free human beings who are of themselves to impart purpose and direction to their lives. The need for imagination, the sense of truth, and a feeling for responsibility, these three forces are the very nerve of education. So in looking at the close to 30 years I've taught children, I think this might be the last year I've taught, but I'm still teaching grade 12. I have to tell you, this is just the picture of the children or the students that I have taught who have been in touch with me in the last 3 weeks. In the last 3 weeks. So at the top we have a girl, maybe for confidentiality, I won't say their names, but she lives in Australia and she's studying to be a neurosurgeon. She is 26 years old, walked through a medical degree and decided that she wants to go into to become a brain surgeon. The next girl I taught in Toronto in grade 6, and she's 25 and she's a nurse. Critical care emergency room nurse, and she loves her job and she's highly resilient and feels very capable of addressing at the age of 25 families who are dealing with emergencies. The lower bottom was just actually that was in September, late August actually, so maybe not a month. This last picture came in late August, where my second group had an impromptu reunion, and about 7 of them showed up who were local or just coming in, and they met for dinner. And they are doing all kinds of things, from hotel management around the world to studying an MA in architecture to being a forest technician, and et cetera. So then we have two 35-year-olds here with children in my backyard, one who has a political science degree, who is one of the most well-balanced people I know, who built a studio for me, and I met him every single day. And I saw him, you know, when he was 7 and 8 and 9 years old, and he is still the same person he was when I taught him. And as is the girl here, who's a forester and a mom of two, lives in Mackenzie. These two are two of the most, and they're still best friends, by the way. They've been best friends since kindergarten at 35. And this boy was in my studio just not too long ago. And he was building, he was actually pouring and creating an architectural mold. He's a permaculture designer in India, and he has an idea of creating an ability to have people grow food on the side of their tenement buildings in Asia. He sees that everywhere, and he's building a model for forms. He's highly inventive. He's got energy to boot. And he was back in Nelson for a visit. This girl I taught in Toronto, she's 25 and the third violin in the Regina Symphony. Are they resilient? Absolutely. The sense of community only grows. It doesn't end. At this point in time, it's really about how do we hold our children in care. And not what do we teach them, but how do we teach resilience and wholeness and the ability for each one, each of us, to know what our own work is and to act on it. And I have to say, I've met a lot of children, hundreds, if not close to thousands, in 35 years of teaching, and the courage for this, for the future, is very strong in Waldorf graduates.